Hello, I'm Emma Manners, the 11th Duchess of Rutland, and welcome to a very, very special Christmas episode of Duchess, coming to you from my very own home at Beaver Castle. The Christmas holidays are one of my favourite times of the year. It's a time for giving. It's a time when you get to be close to loved ones, and it's when Beaver shines its very brightest. The past year has had its ups and downs, but it's also been such a wonderful journey with all of you listeners, and I really consider you all to be part of my family here. So I'd love to introduce you to my amazing daughter, Eliza. She'll be helping me on my podcast at Beaver today. So Eliza, I'm going to hand the baton over to you. But before I do, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, firstly, thank you for letting me take on the baton. I am Eliza. I am your third daughter and I grew up here at Beaver, but I don't really live at Beaver anymore, sadly, now that I'm in London. I work as an interior designer. I set up my own business at the beginning of this year, and that's always been something that we did together.
And now, Eliza, since we're making this very, very special Christmas episode for our fans, I wanted to ask you, do you consider yourself a fan of the podcast?
I am definitely a big fan of the podcast. What I really loved, and I found it particularly this season, is that the variety of people that you have in terms of age. Imogen Wyville, who was one of the younger people that you've interviewed, I love that she's sort of at the beginning of taking on the mantle and running the house. And then we went to Emma Fitzalan Howard, and she is, 30 whatever years down the line of running it. So I thought that that was really amazing, seeing the difference in people starting and people in the middle of their journey and people, sort of having lived there and run it for 30 years or so.
And the confidence that comes with the time that you have been in the house.
Definitely. What about you, Mum? What are some of the things that you loved most about doing the show?
For me, Dying, it was the most magical thing was knowing that there is no judgment from these women because we're all in the same bag and we all have the same problems. Our roofs may vary in size, but fundamentally, every single woman that I met, I felt this great passion that they have with their homes and this great sense of duty. And with it came, as they grew into their roles, knowledge and love.
And I think we're going to hear more about your love and your experience and your courage through this episode.
I hope so.
So with that in mind, let's learn a bit about you and about your upbringing and about Beaver.
So where shall I start? I grew up in the Welsh borders, in the Welsh marshland, where England meets Wales. And that is where my family have lived since the 1700s. My father's family were a Quaker family, and I've got Thomas Watkins's diaries sitting on my desk downstairs. And if I'm having a bad day, I often refer to his prayer that he would have as he walked every day 10 miles to the Quaker meeting house and then 10 miles back. And in a February day when there was thick snow on the ground, he would pray for the little lambs. And I think that's a magical way. And also I love the fact that my roots gave me, particularly with the Quaker side, this great sense of duty and that life is not really about the journey of making money, and money is often the root of all evil. Actually, the journey of our lives is about being custodians and handing things on, and when we have enough, sharing with others. And I think the Quaker roots certainly gave us that fundamental foundation. I didn't really realize it, but as I've grown older, I think I've reflected on that quite a lot.
And what about your childhood? So you grew up in Wales. Tell us a bit more about that.
So I grew up in Wales and we had a small farm on the Welsh borders. Of course, we ran a B&B and that's a farmhouse bed and breakfast. And I adored helping with that. I was front of house and Mum did the cooking. My job was then to go and take their breakfast orders. And I changed the rooms and did all the sort of changing. And then I served the breakfast. But we were a family business. And so everyone had their role. And that's been something that I've loved bringing to the family here, where everyone has their role. When you were little,
definitely,
you were all very much part of the running the ice cream shop, helping in the tea rooms.
And so after leaving home, you obviously studied as an opera singer. Tell us a bit more about what that was like and what sort of aspects of that you brought to running the castle.
That gave me that ability to really stand up in front of people and project oneself with confidence. And I think that has been a huge thing for my journey here. A dear cousin of mine called Andrew Price wrote to me when we got married and said, "Darling Em, you've left the stage and joined the stage of life. And in so many ways, you have to, at times, living in heritage, go through the private door and make a speech or go and have a dinner and leave your children behind the screen with a nanny." And so many times you would have seen me doing that.
Definitely.
Being here.
And it's a different kind of stage, but it is a stage. And what about your own family, Mum? Describe the journey of coming from your background and what it was like meeting Dad and becoming part of the Rutland family.
That's a lovely question because, of course, it was a huge journey. There was a lot of emotion because we're all feeling that we're coming into an unknown world on many levels. And there was a lot of apprehension from my side of the family, but also excitement. And one of the things that was so embracing was Dad's family. They're so warm. And you never felt at one moment that you were being looked down on in the class way, because they just embrace me and they encourage me to be my own person.
Describe the experience of first seeing Beaver, first laying eyes on it.
I had a Fiat 205 at the time and it was two door and I thought it was like a Rolls Royce. And Dad had asked me up to stay for a shooting weekend. He always had all his friends come and stay at the castle for a shooting weekend. And I had been invited, and I think the family may have thought, yes, I was his girlfriend. They knew that we had been seeing each other a little time, but I'd never actually stepped inside the castle. And I arrived at a village about 4 or 5 miles from here called Croson Carriel. And I came through the village and turned round a corner. And I remember halting my little car and looking and just taking in a deep breath and thinking, "You'll be fine. Kick on." That's my favorite saying. And I drove up the drive and knocked on the door, or I think there was a bell. And of course, as we know, you never know if the bell's ringing because the sound of the bell is miles away. So I think I stuck my thumb on the bell, which made sure it was very annoying. And I think a very disgruntled looking sort of butler came down and said, "You called," and took me to the drawing room. And I was just shaking like a leaf. And I can remember that day so well because I was early. Never a good idea to be too early. And two, there was no sign of David. And so I'd arrived, you know, before the host. But in the drawing room, there were these enormous red sofas. And lying, having an afternoon snooze on one of the sofas was my mother-in-law. And the butler deposited me in the drawing room and left. And so I sat on the opposite sofa and thought, just be quiet. Anyway, she woke up my dear mother-in-law and she said, oh, you must be Emma. So that was lovely.
Oh, how sweet.
Yeah, it was really lovely.
Oh, and Beaver itself means beautiful view in French. So tell us a bit more.
When they arrived here in 1066, the Norman French arrived at the top of the hill and looked out in their French and said, "Belle voix," from every room.
A beautiful view.
Exactly. As it is, every room you look out, you see another wonderful view. And the English, as we know, can't pronounce French. And so over generations, it has become Beaver.
Beaver from Belvoir.
From Belvoir.
And so, Mum, let's talk a bit more about Beaver and the history of Beaver.
Well, number one, this is the fourth castle that has been on this site. So the first castle was the Norman stronghold. And before that, there was a sort of wooden fort on top of the hill. But the family came over in 1066 with William the Conqueror. It's really hard to believe, isn't it, that they've been here that long. Mm. And they were the standard bearers to William the Conqueror.
What is a standard bearer?
So they were the tough guys that kind of stood behind William and fought off anyone that was trying to finish him off. So they were obviously quite brutal people.
Oh, gosh.
And because they were so good at defending him, William gave them a lands, the Manners family, de Manier, they were known as, up on the Scottish borders at a place called Etal Castle. And about 300-400 years later, they came down and they married into the family that lived here at Bever. The other three castles were destroyed by war. And if you go to your bedroom, darling, to the right of your bedroom is the Norman Tower that was the original stronghold tower.
And when you go into it, you can see and feel that it's sort of a different period. And
ancient. But what I found fascinating, because obviously one of the things that is so special for Bever that we have this 1,000 years of archives in our archives. So when I was looking through, when we found the fact that Capability Brown had designed the fourth castle.
Amazing. And so what year was it then finished?
So it was finished in 1825. And this room, as you can see, this has got a hugely French feel to it. And it was the first room of its kind to copy, really, the French drawing rooms from Paris. And from Bever, this went all over London and Mayfair and was copied throughout the British Isles. But it is totally unique to that period. Aunt Ursie, who we all adored, reminded me on many occasions, on that very sofa just there, Winston Churchill was sitting. And the crackly wireless behind, Winston heard the abdication of Edward VIII. And Aunt Ursie remembers the tears running down his cheeks. So there are many special memories of this room. One more thing, my darling. On the screen, right to the left of that fireplace, there is a forbidden place where if gentlemen and ladies retired after their meals and they had created a little bit of an interest between each other, a letter might be put behind the secret screen to say where they might meet for a tete-a-tete later.
Oh, wow, how scandalous.
But the ceiling for me is one of the most exciting things in the room because you've got to remember it was painted by one of the Wyatt sons and all the children on that ceiling, my darling, with wings are the ones that died. Wow. And all ones without wings are the ones that survived. And here is the Duke.
Yeah.
And there on the other side in the miniature form is Elizabeth.
So beautiful.
And there in that large arch, she is with her lover.
And sort of beautiful cherubs dancing on the ceiling. And it's really special. I hope that we can share an image of it on the Instagram to show everyone. It really, really is one of my absolute favourites. We have such an amazing collection of art. And so tell us a bit more about what your favourite paintings are.
One of my favourite paintings would be the painting of the beautiful Catherine Marley. And she was such a beauty. And from her, the Manners women are meant to get their beauty from. That would definitely be one of my favourites. Yeah.
So having spoken to so many of my friends who are listeners of the podcast, something that I think everyone has enjoyed so much is the podcast has really amplified the voice of women. And Mum, it would be great if you could tell us some of the wonderful women who have called Bever their home and the role that they have had in the history of Bever.
Well, let's start with Elizabeth. Elizabeth arrived here 18. She went on the grand tour. On the grand tour, she gathered many of her design ideas. The ceiling in the state dining room is copied from a ceiling in Rome from a church called Santa Maria Maggiore. And, you know, that was a direct influence. So she was busy having babies and building this castle. She was also a great friend of Prince Regent's. And she was on the committee in London to help design and lay out the London as we know it today.
Oh, wow.
So she's very visionary. She created a model farm below the castle after enclosure. At the beginning of the 1800s, we had the end of the agriculture as we knew it, and this wide open plan farming that we know today. And so she was ahead of her time, not very tall, very determined, very driven, and very much on her own a lot of the time. Mm. I think then most probably the next inspirational woman would be Violet. She was strong. She was beautiful. She was very arty, very offbeat. She had an alternative way of looking at life and did it her way.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important characteristic because you're very much on your own running Heritage. But Violet put all the bathrooms in. Thank you, Violet. So every bathroom. And now you'd never get planning permission because if you go around the castle and look at them, they're sort of lobbed on to a tower and hanging off with a few stilts underneath them. And you look at them and think, Violet, that must have been Violet. And then the one big thing that Violet did, which I'm so grateful for, is that she was devastated. We had no sort of formal gardens to go and sit in. So she instructed Harold Pito to lay out the rose garden that's just below the garden.
Amazing. So before it was just sort of hillside.
Yeah.
Wow. And that is the only aspect of formal garden that Beaver has.
Absolutely. So, yes, and that cost a fortune. And round the castle, we've got these wonderful legacies to Violet with the bust that she did of her daughters. So there's a great one of Dinah Cooper as you go down to the chapel. And then the extraordinary effigy of her darling son, Lord Haddon, who died tragically young, that took her most of her life to complete.
Amazing. And so, Mum, there are so many beautiful gardens around the castle. Tell us a bit more about them.
When we arrived here, there was just the rose garden and the spring garden. And so one of the things I want to do is connect these gardens up. I think the first thing I did here is replant up the rose garden. There's this amazing group of Cibber statues in what we call the statue garden now that were just sort of sitting at the bottom of the hill and there was no meaning to them. So I designed a garden around them so it enclosed the statues and then put a topiary garden in the other side with David and Emma. And then from that garden, we go down into our cemetery garden, which actually wasn't there before, where all the pets are buried. And then the wood below this garden was just totally overgrown. So 20 years ago, I went in and just cleared out all the dead trees and elders and so on and so forth, and left the good oaks, and then planted up the Japanese garden and filled it with aces and hundreds of camellias, rhododendrons, cherries, and put in two lakes and steps and paths and benches and all the sort of things one would imagine. And that's an ongoing program.
And you got the sort of inspiration because the whole time that you've lived at Beaver and that I've lived at Beaver, it has been overgrown. So you, if I'm right in saying this, my great aunt Ursi, who was born in 1918, she was one of the people who sort of helped you in the vision of it and restoring it as to how it was in her childhood. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes, Diane. Ursi has been an inspiration on so many levels with my role here at Beaver. And we did very much work on her idea and vision and memory of how it was. But I've also learned now the trees themselves and the planting of the trees guided me on my journey of unraveling how it was once upon a time.
And so in your eyes, what is your personal secret to a great British garden?
I think most probably because of where I am here at Beaver, it has to be a vista. It has to be leading you on.
So, Mum, ghosts have come up a lot in your podcast. Tell us a bit about the stories that you have of seeing ghosts.
Well, honestly, I've never seen a ghost, thank goodness. Not like you have. But I have felt Elizabeth from day one to be on my shoulder here at Beaver. I felt she's with me. I felt she's guiding me. She's encouraging me. She's pushing me on. At times, I'll have conversations with her and say, just leave me alone, Elizabeth. I'll do it my way. But there is this feeling that she is absolutely there. I've heard footsteps in upstairs rooms. Mm-hmm. And when you children were small, I'd be running round the corridors because I'd hear a child cry and there was no child there. So those are my ghost stories. I've also seen people affected by ghosts. So we had a group of Americans who were staying at the castle and they left their caps on in the building. And literally, you could see a sort of movement on the head of this poor gentleman. And this has been recorded a lot. The ghosts have...
chucking off the hat.
Yes.
Because it's rude to wear a hat inside.
Yes.
How funny, I've never heard that story.
Yes.
So when we were younger, I mean, not that I remember this firsthand, but you have told me since, we being me and the other children, used to see ghosts quite a lot. And I think that I had a ghost come out of my wardrobe in my bedroom and say that I wasn't going to be there for Christmas. Is that true?
That is true, my darling. It was horrendous. Oh. Poor dying Vi had the experience, do you remember, where coming back from school, there was a sort of medieval guy standing in the corridor outside our bathroom, and Violet had to walk through the ghost to get to the kitchen. And when she came to the kitchen, she was white. Absolutely white. And I said, what's the matter, dying? And she said, oh, Mommy, I can't tell you. I said, just tell me, what's the matter? And she had to walk through this dreadful creature. And of course, the other thing that I've always had is my wonderful Esther on the other side.
The white witch.
Who's a white witch. And she does something called radionics. And so she works on the energy of these spirits and she connects into their souls and she's helped a lot of them go over. I used to run around the castle corridors screaming at the ghosts, telling them to go into the towers where they weren't interfering with my family. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember.
I mean, it was madness, total madness. Anyone looking at me. But you know, there was so much to deal with. And then the ghosts.
Yeah, them on top of everything.
On top of everything, somehow. So you had to be strong with them and in charge. But I will still feel, walking down a corridor, when the hairs go up on the back of my neck, I know there's someone with me.
Mm. We could talk about ghosts all day, couldn't we?
We could.
Because there's so many stories. So, Mum, how would you define your role today at Beaver? And what does it include? And what are some of the obstacles that you have come up against in the past?
I definitely had, or felt, there was a lot of feeling that I didn't have the skill set. I felt that people around me were nervous about what abilities I had to do my job here. I think I have developed the role as we've gone along. And you can only really be true to what your strength is. Mm. And I think most probably I'm quite visionary and I cut through a lot of tape in how I operate.
Yeah.
And I get to the crux of things to try and make things work. So it was fundamental to get the business working.
Definitely.
It felt as if it was draining in every department. Mm. So the departments were overloaded with people and they were inefficiently being run. And so I was very ruthless in the early days and made a lot of redundancies and really had to streamline it. I shut departments down because I couldn't see how we could continue running them and make this business work. And then I outsourced them to local people. So there is very little cash. And after 20 years of running this business, I think we're only starting to really break even. And that's with a lot of hard work. So you don't go into a job running Heritage thinking that it's going to be easy or it's going to give you a very ritzy, grand lifestyle and yachts and jockey holidays. That is not what Heritage is about. In my humble belief, every woman that I know who does what I do, they're incredibly grounded and practical and totally in contact with their staff, with their team, with their community. They're not at all head in the clouds. I think that's a perception that people may have, but it's a very real role that we have in the 21st century, keeping this heritage together.
Yeah, and keeping the roof over our heads, as you say.
So keeping the roof over our head, but also enjoying it.
And also, ultimately, it's a family home as well. You know, this is where you, my dad, and five of us children grew up. And you've got to have it as a family home and enable people to live in it.
Exactly. That balance is forever. I'm having my hand wrapped for. Keeping that balance is key. It was very interesting, COVID, wasn't it? We all became quite used to living here as they most probably did 200 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And you could get quite used to that, couldn't you? But the reality is that it's a space that is open to the public and that we share with people and it's a partnership with people.
Yeah.
Christmas, as we know, is a time of giving. And it's wonderful that we're all able to share this Christmas together as families. But let's spare a moment for those families who are having a tough time. And let's think about charities like the one I'm involved with, Rainbows, which is a hospice for children. And you might want to check it out. And Merry Christmas to everyone at Rainbows.
And so tell us a bit more about Beaver today. What are some of the most exciting events you have coming up and the activities and sort of commercial enterprises? What's in the Beaver calendar?
Right now, as we're coming up to Christmas, we've got our first ever Regency Christmas that Charlotte Lloyd Webber has designed. And this is very exciting for us. And so we're open for Christmas. We haven't ever done this before, so it's totally new to us. So we're trying to get all our ducks in a row and hopefully present something wonderful for our visitors. As we come out of the shooting season at the end of January, we go into spring cleaning. And spring cleaning is an immense job here, as you can imagine. All the carpets up, everything mothed, everything polished. But, you know, that'll happen. It's done properly once a year. And it takes a good 6 weeks. We have to go around with scaffolding on all these rooms so we can get up to the top, so we can do all the dusting. Then you come out of that and you go straight into Easter. Easter bunny hunts and all the things that are lovely about Easter.
And the gardens look so lovely.
And the gardens are the best.
Yeah.
Because it's a spring garden. Mm. I can't get that message out enough. You know, we truly are. By the time the snowdrops start showing their little heads,
it's magical.
It starts turning into pure magic. Now we've got this retail village, the engine yard below the castle. That has a programme of its own. It's been like building an old-fashioned village.
Definitely.
Because it's got the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker.
Yeah.
Below the castle.
And it's a real community.
Yeah. So then they have their own programme of events. So I love to follow things like Morris dances and our family chaplain doing a memorial service and all the things that mark the seasons of the year.
Mm.
Mothering Sunday, St. David's Day, St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
All the things that mark...
All of the calendar days.
The calendar days of the year. So that's Beaver today.
And what about the playground?
So Capro, who are the big famous playground makers, are putting in a playground here next year, working through the themes so we
and
can
the design
echo
of it all.
The history of the four castles and Dad's book about resolution.
So exciting.
And
it'll be magical.
Yeah, we'll all be on it, won't we?
We will be. And so, Mum, what about your dream commercial project to do at the castle?
Well, funny enough, Lizzie, it's not commercial, but I'd like to share it with you and our listeners. One of the things I feel that is quite unique about living in this bubble, I call it the Beaver bubble, is that you have this enormous sense of responsibility and ability, because of what we have here, to create our own community on every level. And that's why I interview all the tenants that apply to us to come and live on the estate, not because I'm judging them or questioning them, because I want to know what they do.
Yeah.
I want to know
how
we can
help.
Yeah. We're part of a very big family here, and I want to know their journey. I want to know their life, and I want to know if we can help each other. And as we move forward on this estate, I believe we've got something magic and quite unique. Something that you almost can't buy nowadays. This money is not what it's about. Moving forward, I'd like to create a community that we help each other.
Mm.
I'd love to create like an old-fashioned market where you have your stores and you almost barter with your...
Or exchange produce.
From each other, yeah. Exactly. Where money is less relevant.
Keep it local. And I think that's what COVID taught people, is that it's so essential to get things locally. And that is such an amazing thing that here in Britain we can do.
Yeah, and that's really been interesting, interviewing all these lovely ladies on this podcast. Because one of the unique things that's happened with COVID, I think, is that people have reconnected with their big house on the hill in a way that maybe they'd forgotten, because you're off to foreign parts and they had to come and walk locally. And we found this huge surge of interest again from people just down the road have reconnected with us. And that's been very special.
It's amazing. So, Mum, you always tried to make Christmas as playful and fun as possible as you were bringing up five little children. What are some of your favourite memories of Christmas at Beaver?
Oh, well, that's a great question, because one of my favourite would be going to the window in our kitchen and Father Christmas was ringing his bell for his reindeer and suddenly seeing him and screaming to you all, Father Christmas is here! He's here! So off we'd go and he'd run round the castle, and one year, you naughty children, I think it might have been Alice and Charles, actually went outside and chased him and they actually caught him. So I can't remember what they did with him, but Father Christmas most probably gave them no presents whatsoever. Christmas is so magical. The whole thing for me is magic. So Father Christmas had a very, very dirty foot. Do you remember? We never knew which chimney he would come down. And so when he arrived, generally in our sitting room, he would put ash all over the sitting room floor.
He would.
And so you'd all come in to find your stockings mm-hmm. because you're all too nervous for Father Christmas to put the stockings in your bedrooms.
Yeah.
And you'd open your stockings and then the dirty old thing had munched his mince pie and his glass of sherry and his glass of milk and left crumbs all over the kitchen table. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do.
And
I
then
do.
The carrots at the front door, he chewed them and spat them out. And often Father Christmas had forgotten to get his reindeer to munch the carrots at the front door. I would sprint down before
and eat them all
and quickly munch them and spit them out. And then off we went to church, and there was always excitement about what we wore to church. Oh, it was wonderful.
Is that something you brought from your childhood, do you think?
Yes, dressing up for church was one of the big things in our week. Yeah, got out of our sort of farming clothes and put on our Sunday best.
Yeah.
And hats and bonnets and goodness knows what. Off we went to church and then come back, and then the entire Manners family, this is the tradition, would arrive in the private drawing room with laden with gifts.
Mm.
Enormous amounts of gifts. And so these gifts then would be running round of family members giving gifts to each other, and paper everywhere.
A complete mess.
I think one of my favourite Christmases would be last year, Elise, when you sang that amazing song. Do you remember? What was the song?
Oh, The Rattling Bog.
How did it go? How did it go?
Oh God, I don't know if I can
go
sing.
Go on, just do it. Go on.
Well, it's a sort of an Irish jig, I guess.
Yeah.
And it goes, oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh, the rattling bog, the bog down in the valley, oh. And every verse I would sing, and then that is the chorus. So everyone would join in, sing the chorus. And by the end of it, everyone's sort of slightly tipsy and clapping their hands, jumping on the floor, stomping
and
their
banging
feet,
the
banging
table.
The table.
It was wonderful.
There's always music involved with,
every
with
Christmas.
We're all quite musical in the family from you.
Yeah.
And that is always a key part. I mean, we used to do Beaver by Candlelight. Do you remember?
That you love that.
I loved that. And it basically is a load of hymns being sung around the castle by candlelight. And it was such a special thing, I think.
Yes. So music's very important. And going and watching the Queen's speech is an incredibly important part of the day. And then collapsing in the evening, mm-hmm. having
with the fire on.
A set of fire, walking the dogs.
Yeah. And so why do you think it's such a magical time, Christmas at Beaver?
I think that Beaver's, it's sort of a party place, Beaver. Mm. It, everything about it is very over the top. And so for occasions where you have the castle full of friends and family, it starts to twinkle and it just feels as if it has that champagne atmosphere.
Charlotte Lloyd Webber has obviously done the decorations for this year. And behind you is the most amazing tree with a peacock on top of it and sort of peacock feathers coming round. So what's your favourite aspect of the Christmas that she has created?
I think the favourite is the kissing ring, which is in the guard room, is a Regency kissing ring, which in Regency times they would have gone under and had a Regency Christmas kiss.
Oh, sweet.
So it's the new version of mistletoe, most probably. Oh. But that is the kissing ring in the guard room. And also, I adore the Regency tree, which is in our ballroom, which is just as they would have decorated a tree in Regency times.
Mm.
So that's very special as well.
But amazing.
Everything about this Christmas I think we're going to really celebrate. I'm doing a sort of dinner with the Duchess evening at the beginning of December, and I'm inviting people to come and join me. And I just think people are ready to dress up and have some
Definitely.
Fun.
Definitely. So it's the beginning of December now. When is the last opportunity people can have to look around the castle and look at all the beautiful decorations?
So open for the entire month of December, and I think we close on the 2nd of January. Bearing in mind, I think there's loads of people who want to come and do something in that time between Christmas and New Year.
Mm.
And it's still here, and so we want to share it with everyone.
Amazing. And tell us a bit more about the way that we do Christmas and how you think Christmas Day is going to be for us.
Well, Christmas Day this year is going to be wonderful because we're all together and we're able to share it with family members. And that's really special. My brother's coming with all his family. Mum is going to be here and other family friends are going to be here. Robin will be here, Humi. So lots of people that are special to us will be sharing our meal with us on Christmas Day. I don't know what stage Father Christmas stops coming to.
I was going to say, you are a big fan. You're a big drama queen. So the more theatrical a Christmas, the better for you. So I don't know if Father Christmas has stopped yet.
And no, Father Christmas hasn't stopped. So Father Christmas will most probably still come and do something because I do love Father Christmas. We then all get up and have a big breakfast. And it always seems a bit of a rush on Christmas morning somehow.
Yeah. To get to church.
To get to church, because church is at 10:30. And we all go to church and then we come back for champagne and present giving. And that happens generally in this room now. And we have our lunch in the state dining room.
Because there's so many people invited.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful.
The problem with me is that you have a castle and lots of bedrooms and they all need filling.
They all need filling. Yeah. Exactly. And it makes Christmas an extra special time, having all of your family and closest friends staying.
Yeah. And also sometimes there are people who, you know, they're on their own. And so I love gathering up people who, you know, I hate to think of people being on their own at Christmas. And so we do a lot of that, don't we? And that has been a big part of my journey, really. So Christmas is special. We would generally end the day wanting an afternoon kick, but having walked the dogs.
You certainly would.
Definitely. A siesta.
A siesta. And a bit more food before we then go to sleep.
Absolutely. And another Christmas.
Yeah.
We're really excited about this Christmas, aren't we, Di?
Very excited. So, Mum, I know that this is one of your favourite questions to ask your interviewee, so I'm very excited to ask you it. What would you say to the women of Beaver 6 generations before you?
Well, I thought about this a lot over the time I've been interviewing people. And of course, the 6th generation for me would have been Elizabeth. So what would I say to Elizabeth? I always feel quite emotional about Elizabeth. And I'd say, thank you and well done in creating this unbelievable legacy. And I really hope I haven't let you down.
And you most certainly haven't. I know that she would be completely admiring of everything that you've done.
Thank you, Diane.
And then, of course, what would you say to 6 generations in the future?
I'd say, just be your own person. Stay grounded. Do and bring to this role what you're comfortable with and never be put off balance by any of those grey-suited individuals. Just keep pedalling your own paddle.
Well done, Mum. Well, thank you so much, Mum, for letting me interview you today. I am so proud of you on this podcast. It's been so wonderful to listen to it. It has been really inspiring. And I know from talking to so many people that they all feel the same. So congratulations on it and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Oh, it's been a wonderful chat, Dying. Thank you so much, Eliza, for joining me on the Duchess Christmas special. It's been a fantastic experience doing this with you. And I'd like to thank all of you for listening. And I sincerely wish you are able to spend the festive period in warmth, happiness, and around the ones they love. Merry Christmas, everyone, and thank you for all your support. Before we go, important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show. So please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofies and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.